listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Your copay.
War on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization.
War on the workers.
And cooperation.
War on the workers.
When they call you a team.
War on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah.
Well, good evening, Houston. This is Ron Gagne.
And I'm Tim Pagel, and we'd like to welcome you to another edition of Voices at Work here at KPFT Radio 90.1, Houston, Texas.
A show by workers for workers. First off, we'd like to do a little bit of current events. We'll be having a guest, Jerry Locke, director of the Texas Fair Trade Coalition, on a little bit later. I've had a lot of different unions mention that they want us to talk more about all the jobs that are leaving this area, Houston area, and going to Mexico, like GE, and some of these companies are even forcing their subcontractors that they buy parts from. They're telling them, look, you go and you set up your factory in Mexico, or we're going to stop doing business with you. So we're going to be talking to Jerry about the Texas Fair Trade Coalition founding convention at the end of the month, and hopefully we'll answer some questions. If you've ever wondered what IMF and WTO and all that means to you in your daily life, these are some of the things that you can't wait until your factory shuts down, and then you're going to, okay, now who do I complain to? Now how do I do something? You can't wait that late. You've got to do something now, and hopefully Jerry will help us learn what we can do.
You know, not too long ago, I got all those letters, the WTOs and the IMFs and the GATTs, and I wrote them down on a piece of paper, and I put them in a basket, and I shook them up, and I poured them all out. and it says, I am getting S-H-A-F-T-E-D.
Oh,
I don't really know what they mean, but that's what it says is happening. So
I believe it. So if you've got questions for our guest, go ahead and get on the hold line, and hopefully in 15 minutes or so, we'll get him online. He can answer your questions. I'd like to mention that the Future of Labor Conference, a youth leadership training class, is going to be held at the end of this month on Friday, July 29th, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:40 p.m. It's going to be held at the Pace Local 4-1 at 311 Pasadena Boulevard in Pasadena. I know they had a lot of success with it last year, and maybe next week we can get Lee Medley in here and talk to him a little bit about it. If you've got questions, or if you'd like to sign up your high school age children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, you can give them a call at 713-473-3381. That's 713-473-3381, and ask for Lee Medley, and he'll be able to fill you in on all the details. And it's something that's real important. We're in a long-term battle here. The war on the workers has been going on for decades, and we need to train the next in line, the people that are just on the verge of entering the workforce. We need to train them now. If you have any questions, you can either contact them or contact the Central Labor Council, which that number is 713-923-9474. I'd also like to mention, I'm on several email lists, and I got a news email about Sister Rebecca Flores of United Farm Workers mentioned that the UFW signed a contract with four Catholic parishes, and it's the lay workers at these different parishes, and it's a historic event. It's no parish in this country has ever had a union contract with their employees, and these union members believe that this action that they have taken is supported and endorsed by the U.S. Catholic bishops and the Pope, who have declared in many encyclicals, pastoral letters, statements that all people have the right to organize and to join unions or other associations, and that workers are to be treated as persons rather than simply a factor of production, and that further, the dignity of workers requires adequate health care, security for old age or disability, unemployment compensation, healthy working conditions, weekly rest, periodic holidays for recreation and leisure, and reasonable security against arbitrary dismissal. So
now,
it's really good
four,
to see.
Four parishes, what diocese are we talking about, or was that locally here?
No, down in the valley.
Okay.
The UFCW and the Catholic diocese down there have had a long-standing relationship where the UFW has dealt with them on several different occasions, helping them with their farm workers and people out in the fields and all the way back to the days of Chavez. So it's good to finally see that, you know, in most cases, the people didn't feel like they needed a union, but they had one incident where a new priest came into a parish and just fired everybody. And that's what kind of prompted it, that they didn't believe that priest was acting in accord with what the church and the bishops had said. So
church teachings.
They decided to take the church's offer up and say, okay, we're going to form a union. Mm-hmm. And they've done so. And I think it's a great first step. We also have a news report done by Jackson Allers.
This is actually part of what we did last week. We mentioned last week we were on the justice bus, and we went down to Texas City to attempt to give them an award for no justice at the Dow Sterling plant in Texas City. And this is a little piece of a telephone interview that we did.
You want to say it? You want to say the spot?
I'm just reading it.
No. I'm totally. Are you sure? You are listening to the KPFT News installment for Voices at Work, a community-sponsored radio program representing working men and women. We bring labor issues to those who care in Houston, Texas. The Harris County chapter of the AFL-CIO organized a justice bus tour last week to highlight workers' rights to organize into unions. This tour coincides with the AFL-CIO's National Month of Awareness called Voice at Work, designed to educate and organize workers about the problems they face and how unions can help. One of the groups particularly active in the AFL-CIO's campaign are the former Enron employees. Debbie Parada spoke on the steps of KPFT Studios about the AFL-CIO's involvement in helping to increase severance packages.
The AFL completely came in and took over and supported us 100%. Here we are, non-union employees, and here they came to our aid immediately. Before that, we have been fighting for months to get our severance package that has been temporarily approved right now for our severance package, about $29 million more. This is something that's very historic because never has there ever been in the bankruptcy court of America that the unsecured creditors were paid before the secure creditors.
Because Texas is a right-to-work state, employers are not required to join or pay dues or fees to a union. For employers, this means that most workers are not under the protective wing of union legal services. This has particular weight when considering the massive amount of immigrant laborers that make up the industrial and service sectors in Houston. Employers resist unions because of their bargaining power over issues such as pay and benefits, which are usually more favorable for union members. In about one-third of the organizing campaigns, employers illegally fire workers just because they want to form a union. Despite this fact, workers showed solidarity at one stop of the Justice bus tour by coming out on their lunch break to stand with the bus riders.
Workers actually rallied. They would come out on their lunchtime and rally in front of the plant, right there on the right outside the gate. It's almost unheard of in the union movement because generally workers try to organize a union in secret because they're scared. These workers kind of said, you know, in your face. And in Baker Concrete, so far hasn't fired any of the workers, but they could. You know, the union movement's got to go, it's got to reach out and organize, you know, a new base.
As trade barriers continue to erode between countries, the traditional base of union membership has continued to dwindle as well. The manufacturing sector loses hundreds of jobs every month to corporate exportation of labor to less regulated countries. And, with the Enron scandal looming, the Justice Bus Tour in Houston found allies in corporate and immigrant workers. This is Jackson Allers, KPFT News, Houston.
Thank you, Jackson, for that excellent report on the Justice Bus. Better than I could have done, that's for sure. I guess that's why he's the reporter and I'm just the on-air mouth, huh,
Tim? Yeah, just to kind of follow up with some of that information that he was giving on some facts that I have here. Employers that illegally fire at least one worker for union activity during organizing campaigns is 25%. Employers that hire consultants to help them fight union organizing drives is 75%. And employers that force employees to attend one-on-one anti-union meetings with managers, 78%. And the list goes on and on. You can see that how hard it can be for workers to organize a union at their company and some of the struggles that they face. And the workers that we met at Baker Concrete have really risen to the challenge and are right up there with the best of them. Fighting for what they believe in.
No doubt.
Hello, good people. Can you hear me? Well, this is Jackson Allers with KPFT News. I'm happy to be here with Ron and with Tim. This is going to be an ongoing collaboration between KPFT News and Voices at Work. These labor issues are hugely important for many reasons. I mean, Houston is a very corporate town. And as a result of that, Houston has a lot of laborers from all sorts of sectors. The corporate sector, the manufacturing sector,
service,
big time in service. This bus tour that you guys just went on, that you came to KPFT Studios, and that's one thing we should note to the people, that KPFT Studios got a Justice Here Award, am I right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, for providing us with a voice.
Out of seven awards, this is the only stop that we delivered a Justice Award, and mainly for all the good work that the station does. For all the programming, but I guess in particular for sponsoring a labor radio program, the first ever.
Yeah, and actually putting workers on the radio, not just somebody who's got to force their point of view into a worker's, you know, situation, but actual workers. They put workers on the air, and that's what me and Tim are.
Well, that's an incredibly important point to note, because that implies that the kind of radio that you're hearing right now is community radio. You don't have the talking heads up here. You've got Tim and Ron, and they're doing their thing. And so from the news perspective, we are proud to be covering labor issues in Houston and in the Houston area. And so, good people, you can stay tuned for future collaborations, as I will be and other reporters from KPFT will be covering the labor beat. And I just want to say thank you for having me on.
Hey, and it's a pleasure to have people like you that are out here doing the work and helping us along this, because to be able to have that piece recorded from the Dow Sterling plant and to find out that it was presented across the five Pacifica affiliate networks this week really shows the depth of what the station and you in particular are trying to do here with the news regarding labor. So I appreciate all your efforts.
And that's something to get out there to the people out there in the community. If there's something that they think needs to be reported, contact
call the station.
Call the station.
526-4000 is the business line during the day. Let us know. We're willing to come out. Or better yet, what's wonderful about a community radio station is let us know. And if you know enough about the issue, we'll help you report it. That's what's great about community radio, is that we can enlist you, the interested community member, to actually do that job.
Okay.
So I'm going to turn it over to you fellas.
All right, guys.
Have a great show. I appreciate the inclusion. All right.
Thank you, Jackson. Okay, I believe we've got Jerry on the line. Just let me give a little brief info. Jerry is a director of the Texas Fair Trade Coalition. He has a BA in history from the University of Texas and an MA in family therapy from Antioch University. In the late 60s, he served in the Peace Corps in Kenya. From 84 to 88, he was director of the Central American Peace Initiative. He's worked as an organizer and lobbyist with the Texas State Employees Union, 96 through 98. He worked on a variety of issues. The founder of the Austin Fair Trade Coalition in 1999, founder of Texas Network for Economic Democracy Network in 99, and he's worked on fast-track issues in 17 congressional districts in the state of Texas. Jerry, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
Good to talk to you.
It's good being here, too.
Okay, that's loud. Let me move that back. Okay. I'd just like to start off with the mission statement of the Texas Fair Trade Coalition, which says that it's a diverse, nonpartisan coalition of unions, environmental advocacy groups, consumer groups, family farmers, religious organizations, women's advocacy groups, low-income and immigrant advocacy groups, professors, students, public interest, and fair trade groups. The TFTC promotes democratic control over fiscal and social policies, social justice, workers' rights, livable wages, and sustainable development and trade policy. Boy, that's a good mission statement.
Yes, it is. We think so, too.
So, with all that being said, what is it that this coalition is supposed to do?
The primary mission of the coalition is to build the capacity in Texas to win the trade battles that are ahead, like NAFTA and the WTO and the China vote and the present fight over fast track, and to forge as broad and deep a coalition as possible. Like in the NAFTA fight, labor pretty much did that by itself, and lots of environmental groups really didn't weigh in, the farmers really didn't weigh in, the religious community really didn't weigh in, and it was just labor. And it's been our experience over the last year and a half that when all those different communities weigh in, that the congressperson gets pretty nervous, because they can kind of factor in labor and how much they can hurt them, but it makes them real nervous when huge sections of the community are saying, we don't want this. And so our job is to build that coalition, and that's what I've been doing for the last year and a half. And we're still working in fast track, but we're kind of we're just at the in the process of kind of formalizing the coalition statewide, and then starting to do a lot of workshops all over the state. We'll be sponsoring city resolutions. We'll do a great big gathering of students on globalization issues in October. And then the main job is to build the coalition.
Jerry, this is Tim Pagel.
Uh-huh.
Would you say that the catalyst for this coalition building started, you know, sometimes around the battle in Seattle, when it started bringing all these various groups, the environmentalists and labor started coming together, when they realized that they really, both of them, had a lot at stake here dealing with globalization issues, and they did a pretty good job of bringing issues out into the forefront and getting at least in people's minds and conversations. And now we're at since 9/11, you're starting to see where that coalescing is somewhat divided, especially when you know that so many of the labor unions have gotten behind the war effort.
Yeah, but it really hasn't hurt the work that we're doing. The labor unions, some of them or many of them, might be behind the war effort, and you know, and that there are other divisive issues. There, you know, in Texas, the environmentalists and labor really go after each other, like in the state legislature. And there are huge divisions, and what we're saying to them all and all of that is, we know that there'll be areas that you won't agree with each other, but what's most important right now, and I think what we first started seeing real clearly in the United States, there are huge areas of common ground that haven't been acknowledged in the past. And that's what we want people to do in our coalition, is to acknowledge that they have common ground, that they have, you know, common struggles, and that, you know, that environmentalists and farmers and workers are all working together on these issues. And, you know, people will still have their divisions, and that's just part of life. But they're, you know, for the first time, and I think you're right about Seattle, at least for me, it was real kind of eye-opening to go to Seattle and see, you know, there was Turtles and Teamsters, and it was these coalitions that it wasn't just the U.S., it was people coming from all over the world, farmers from Japan, and, you know, on and on, labor union people from Africa and Latin America. And then when I went to Senegal to a meeting of all the Jubilee South, which work on IMF and World Bank issues, it was real interesting to see that their coalitions in the Global South include everyone. You know, it's religious organizations, it's women's organizations, it's peasants, it's labor union people, it's on. And they're, in some ways, they're in many of the countries, or at least the bigger ones of the Global South, they're much better organized and much more advanced than we are in terms of coalition building. Go ahead.
Well, that's a very important point, is that... you know, we like to think that we here are the ones that are supposed to teach the rest of the world everything, but we're not exactly the best and brightest on all these different issues. And we do have a lot to learn, especially about coalitions, especially our political system. It's so mm-hmm. steered towards divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's, like you say, the coalition between just the environmentalists and labor, it's powerful, and it scares mm-hmm. the hell out of politicians, because mm-hmm. they can't play one against the other when we're united on one particular issue.
Right.
And that's why I think it's so important. I think the first time I talked to you was at the Austin Rolling Thunder.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you what, that I wish everybody could have been to that.
It was fun.
Oh, it was incredible to see all those different people,
yeah.
all these different backgrounds,
yeah.
There for the same thing. They wanting to take back our country.
Mm-hmm.
To really be a democratic nation again.
And that's what Seattle was about, too.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the convention coming up at the end of the month.
Well, we're just at the process of formalizing the coalition, and on May 17th, we had what we called a founding committee, and it was 25 people from around the state that came together to work on the bylaws and the mission statement of the organization, and it included representatives from the big three groups that have dealt with these trade issues now, which are the farmers, environmentalists, and labor. So we had someone from Texas AFL-CIO, Paula Littles, who you might know, and we also had Wes Sims, who's president of Texas Farmers Union, and we had Larry Freilich, who's the Southeast, the organizer for Texas and Arkansas for the National Sierra Club, and then we had Aaron Rogers from the Lone Star Sierra Club, and then people from religious communities and others, and we had tentative agreement on the bylaws and mission statement and kind of future of the organization. And then in July 22nd, it's a Monday, we'll be meeting in Austin, and there'll be a bigger group that'll include more of all of those groups, plus more religious people, civil rights people, and it'll be, you know, just kind of gathering the coalition, which is a process that will go on for a number of years, if not a lot longer than that. But there we'll finalize the bylaws, we'll finalize the mission statement. Any group that wants to join can join, and it's pretty easy. You just agree with the mission statement, and then the yearly dues we're keeping very, very low at $25 a year, because we really want a big coalition. We don't want money getting in the way of people's ability, you know, organizations' ability to join. And then every organization that joins will appoint its own representative to our board of directors. And we hope that the board of directors could be huge in the future, 400 or 500, you know, groups with their representatives. And then they will elect an executive committee of 5 to 7 people that will function as kind of the lead organization in the coalition.
Well, it sounds real good. That's going to be the end of the month, Monday the 22nd, correct?
Yes, and anyone, you know, if any group wants to join, just call our office in Austin at 512-472-1915, or send me an email, and I can send them all the information, and I'm at jerel@att.net.
Fantastic. Now, hopefully all the people that have told me, Ron, you need to talk about NAFTA, what it's doing, and these factories that are closing, hopefully all these people will come together. That's the problem, is that everybody's been trying to fight the fight on the local level and just in their little world, instead of going to everybody else who's, you know, suffering the same consequences.
And a lot of people don't even know that they're going to suffer the consequences. You know, they're just not aware of how insidious these trade agreements are and kind of all the ramifications, and the media doesn't cover it, so they don't know. And that's really our job over the next few years, is to do, you know, because we can't, the media isn't going to educate them that all their water systems could be forcibly privatized, or their educational systems or healthcare systems, or that foreign corporations are given more rights than American corporations. So we'll be doing that in workshops all over the state, and we'll be training people to be trainers who will then go back to their communities, and we'll help them set up, you know, workshops with union locals, with environmental groups, with churches, with civic organizations, just kind of with everyone, so that we can do kind of the basic sort of education that isn't happening at this point, to tell people how they'll be affected.
I was just curious, with the elections coming up this fall, is your group going out to any of the candidates at this time and talking to them about the Fair Trade Coalition? And are some of the candidates coming to you wanting to give some support, or at least know more about what you're trying to do?
We're a new organization, so they're not coming to us at this point, but they will in the future. And at this point, we're going to them. And we're going to hold a series of briefings with you know, the statewide candidates about what globalization will really mean for Texas. And then we'll be doing work with candidates, and we'll also be doing some work at the state legislature. California has established a Senate Select Committee on the International Trade that does studies on how California's laws and democracy and other aspects of California will be affected by these so-called trade agreements, and we'll be doing something somewhat similar to that in Texas. I mean, I'm not sure what's politically possible, but we'll be attempting to do lots of education at the state legislature.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you've got any questions for Jerry, give us a call, 713-526-5738. Right now we're going to take a short little break and listen to an Albert Collins song, The Working Man's Blues. And let me tell you, if your job is picking up and going to Mexico, you've got some blues to sing. And the fact is that if you are still working, and we're going to learn in a few minutes after the break that you are suffering. Whether you know it or not, you're suffering from these agreements. So let's listen to Albert Collins, The Working Man's Blues, and we'll take your call when we come back.
Well, I walked down to my bed just to see what I could see. I asked the man behind the desk. I said, is there any money for me? Now, he didn't know just what to say. I said, I need that money in a terrible way. Now he didn't say yes, but he didn't say no. He just shook my hand and showed me the door. Oh, Lord, the blues is killing me. Oh, Lord, 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 the blues is killing me. It bothers my mind. She runs to the store and she buys on time. TVs, radios, stereos, and I got all kind of Prince phones. But one of these days, y'all, I think they all gonna be gone. My baby needs clothes. My wife needs a car. It's a wonder, y'all, I got this for her. Landlord knocking and he wants some rent. Now I'm looking for the money that my wife just spent. Hold on. Blues is killing me. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Blues is killing me. And the rich stay rich. And I'm right here in the middle. Now ain't that a barely getting by makes me mean. Cost a politician I'm paying a living real clean. Step down, Mr. Politician, and live like I do. I want you to know the working man blues. Oh, no, oh, no. These blues is killing me.
Okay, that was Albert Collins, The Working Man's Blues. Again, that number is 713-526-5738. If you have a question for Jerry, give us a call. We have a couple people on hold now. You still there, Jerry?
Yes, I am.
Let's see what the first caller, Ron, you're on the air.
Okay. Yes, sir. If Bush gets a fast track, give us a sort of a sketch what would happen to the economy here and where fast track's headed. Thank you very much. I'll listen on the radio. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
I'll explain what fast track is because that'll help answer the question. It's a bill that basically says that Congress can only go yes or no to trade agreements and can not add amendments, and it gives them a limited, very limited time to debate. It gives them very limited hours they can debate, and it cuts out a lot of the committee structure where they do the investigation. That doesn't sound so bad yet, but if you look at this huge expansion of NAFTA called Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, and how it was negotiated, which was in 95, the union sat down, not the unions, the corporations sat down with the trade representatives of the 31 countries or 34 countries and started negotiating this huge trade deal. And the corporations were systematically included. They were given security clearances. They were included at every conference. You know, they were asked to submit papers, et cetera, et cetera. And the rest of us, meaning labor and women's organizations and environmentalists and consumers and farmers and et cetera, were completely excluded from the table. So with, and they finally said, okay, we'll let you be included a little bit. And they set up literally a committee of government officials representing civil society, established a post office box and said you can send your comments into the post office box.
Oh, man.
And there was no one staffing that committee, so it was just, you know, it was a black hole. And so it isn't surprising that the document that was negotiated is really kind of a corporate rights treaty. And it has all these things like forcible privatization of public services, like regulatory takings, that they have a very difficult, if not impossible, time getting through Congress or through our democracies. So they do this secret negotiation where everyone else is excluded from the table, and they include everything there. And then they say, well, this has lots of problems. A lot of people are going to be very upset. Let's first pass fast track, which prohibits all those people and their representatives from adding amendments to this trade deal that was just negotiated by the, it was essentially written by the corporations. And that's the job of fast track, is to, the treaties are written by corporations and then we're prevented from amending them. And it swings a lot of power from Congress to the president, who was, with the corporations and his trade representative wrote the trade agreements. So if we want to stop this expansion of NAFTA that has all this power for corporations and really seriously undermining our democracy, we first got to stop Fast Track, because if Fast Track passes, it will make it very much, much harder to stop this expansion of NAFTA called FTAA.
Okay. And we have Art on the line. Are you there, Art?
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi, Art.
I'm not sure if I'm on the air or I'm on the line.
You're probably very much on the air.
Okay.
You are on the air.
I'm on both. Great. I think, let's see. I'm going to refer back to the other comment that was made a little bit earlier, but I guess a little bit of introduction might be in order. This is Jerry Locke I'm talking to, right?
Yes.
Okay. We came into contact a little. I don't know if you remember, but during the Nader campaign. This is Art Browning. I'm a Green. But anyway, I'm also subscribed to, one of your mail lists, and I really got to take my hat off to you, because everything, you don't send out much, one or two a week, if that, over the average of a month, but everything you send out is packed with information, really valuable stuff, so keep it up.
Thank you.
Free plug there, Jerry.
Thank you, Art.
It was interesting being on hold. Here, I'll get a free plug for myself, too, because I'm one of the guys that answers the phone at the Green Watch, the Harris County Green Party program. It's on every other Thursday night. So So I answer the phone and put people on hold. Now I know what it feels like.
Actually, yeah.
But you've got some good music on, which we don't. Okay, I'll come to the point now. I was thinking when you said that, you know, that no candidates have approached you yet. That was back before the first caller, or the caller just before now. I was kind of surprised to hear that Greens hadn't gotten in touch with you yet. We do have some, you know, a lot of touchstones on those 10 key values and all that.
Actually, some Green candidates have gotten in touch just to get background information and that sort of thing. Yeah, they have. And even actually a couple Democrats did, too.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
I was mainly thinking about the statewide candidates haven't at this point.
I wanted to ask you a specific question about which offices do you think in the state would most impact the working man
and
labor people around the world as well?
Which, like the governor?
Yeah,
and
state offices. Lieutenant governor is pretty important, but we mentioned a few legislators, I think. Is legislation the way to go, or?
It's basically a lot of, very little of this will come through the state, but what we're trying to do is get our representatives at every level educated about how, Texas will be affected.
Okay, I was thinking grassroots stuff. County commissioners is where a lot of work
County, goes. Also city councils, you know, people in churches. I mean, it's all part of the same effort of educating everyone, wherever they be, that the ramifications of these so-called, they're corporate, not so-called, they are corporate rights treaties, and saying, hey, And the resolution that we're offering, like at the cities and counties, doesn't get into where we're not asking them to say fast track is bad or FTA bad or anything like that, but we're saying where they undermine our democracy, that isn't okay. And that's we'll be offering these resolutions in a lot of cities around the state.
At every level we can, right?
Every place we can, because it's part of the educational process that needs to happen.
How do you think, let me ask another question, how do progressives most effectively work with office holders? In other words, you know, we're trying to get some progressive people into office, but at the same time, we want to be able to establish ties with the people who are making the decisions and affect their decisions. What we say makes an effect on their decisions. There are probably other callers stacked up.
Working with a coalition, I think that the main way we do it is build huge coalitions, and that makes them very, very nervous when coalitions come knocking at the door, and it isn't just this group or that group, and usually just one or two in these trade things, but they're faced with really strong coalitions. And that's what we'll be doing, trying to get these the resolutions through cities and counties and all of that, is mobilizing our coalition wherever we're doing that.
Great. You want to remind me, or maybe I can't remember, or I told the callers, I'm trying to remember how I got on your mailing list. You want to tell anybody else that?
Yeah, if they want on, they can just send an email to Gerald. @att.net, and I'll put them on. I have about 10,000 people in Texas on it, and I have, with real concentrations among labor and environmentalists and others, farmers and others. But a lot of people, I've done events for years, and people have signed up in the events and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, I'll try.
I'll sign off now. Thanks for taking me.
Thank you, Art.
See you all
around. Hopefully, I'll get my webpage up this weekend, and we'll put that information on the webpage so people can get to that.
And we're going to have a webpage in a couple of weeks, I think. It'll just be TexasFairTradeCoalition.org.
Okay.
It's under construction, but someone's going to do it most of it next week.
Okay. Fantastic. Barry, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
A couple questions here. One, I'm a little confused here about the support of workers and labor. Have their blind support for the Democratic Party, which is a tax spin party. How is taking more of the working man's money and taxes in the best interest of the workers? And how are the Democrats the, quote, friend of the workers and of labor? Is the first question. It seems to me that taking your income is the worst kind of confrontation.
Well, that's a question that our coalition really doesn't get much involved in.
But you have no problem bashing corporations, I mean.
And I need to say that, you know, a lot of Democratic congresspeople, as Republican congresspeople, are real free traders. And always have been in favor of kind of corporate rights. And what we're doing is trying to put an end to that. I mean, and we need to also rein in the corporations. That'll be a big part of what our coalition will do down the road is attack that problem.
And we also need lower taxes, so we're taking more and more of the working man's money.
Or that we need tax, you know, the tax money that's used needs to be used for things that benefit the people and not corporate. Because a lot of what we have right now is socialism for corporations and the rich, and we have capitalism for the rest of us.
Question, Ian. Do you have any problem with the corporation paying billions of dollars in taxes and donating billions of dollars in charity, billions of dollars to the Red Cross, to the Boy Scouts, to the Girl Scouts, to local charities, et cetera, and charities that could not exist without the corporations and without the corporations?
Well, these organizations have existed without corporations. If the people had a decent wage, they could afford to actually donate more.
Right.
But these corporations that claim to be good corporate citizens are good, you know, they're running the Bahamas so that they can avoid paying any taxes.
They're moving all their jobs overseas where they can pay people 20 cents an hour, which aren't even living wages there, rather than pay some living wages in this country or someplace else.
I think we have some deep philosophical disagreements, and that's okay.
Okay.
What I would like to see more of the show of is that we get both sides of the issue on. It seems to be awfully one-sided in favor of workers. You don't mention anything like employee death, like employee sabotage of equipment, ill-timed strikes like the one at Eastern Airlines. The fact that the union, workers in Tennessee decided they didn't want a union at the, I think it was the Toyota plant.
Well, it's because they were intimidated because
they were free to vote yes or no.
Well, that's incorrect because...
Well, I mean, you're saying the workers there were not free to vote yes or no?
Do you want Enron being the voice for its workers?
No, my question was...
I mean, do you want the WorldCom to be the voice for its workers? I think workers have to have their own voice, and unions are the voice of workers.
I have a question, but were the workers at the Tennessee plant free to vote yes or no?
The problem is, let me ask you this, were they forced to watch anti-union propaganda for hours on end? And the answer to that is yes. They were forced by the company. They were intimidated by the company. The company, how much did the company spend to defeat that campaign? I bet you it's close to $1 million.
That is
free enterprise at its best.
Well, we've got other callers.
Okay.
So thank you for calling, Barry. Rick, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Jerry?
Yeah. It doesn't really ask a direct question regarding the fast track agreement, although it kind of ties in.
Uh-huh.
Hello?
You're here.
I'm still here.
Okay. I thought maybe I dropped off the line. I would argue in the case of the industry that I'm in that it doesn't matter if we have fast track or not. The deal's been done.
What industry is that?
I used to work in IT, information technologies, computers.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been out of work for a couple months here. That's not the point.
Let me ask you, did your job go to India or Pakistan, like so many of them have, with the visas?
Not my particular job, but that's what I'm leading towards.
Oh, okay.
And there's two tracks on that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first track is there was a bill that was passed a couple of years ago that basically liberalized immigration laws to allow more H-1B visas. And secondly, thanks to the magic of the Internet and telecommunications, you don't have to have a call center in the United States anymore. The call center can be in, for example, India,
mm-hmm.
which is the case of a major computer company here in town.
Which computer company is that?
Well, let's just say they merged.
Okay. Okay. I can probably guess.
I can.
We don't want to give any free plugs here.
Just said, exactly. One of my other coworkers, he worked for IBM, and he's always talking about, you know, if it weren't for the H-1B visas, And I've kind of pointed out to him that it really doesn't matter whether they have H-1B visa people here to begin with, because they can just move whatever job you have overseas.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to a job fair, and one of the guys, I think it was Shell Oil or whatever, was saying, you know, we're moving all our operations to Malaysia. We can pay 10 Malaysians the cost of one U.S. worker.
It's even worse than that. But
yeah, well, the thing I want to key in is yes, the H-1B visa people are here, but it strikes me as a very brilliant strategy. You can get people who are out of work or who are worried about their jobs, angry about the guys who are here on the H-1B visa, instead of really placing the blame where it lies, which is with the company.
Right.
And I was wondering if there's a way to build a coalition with the H-1B visa people. Because we're in the same boat. Ultimately, they can be fired just as easily as we are, you know.
Right. And it's also true, I mean, that the coalition that's going to stop all this is going to be an international, global coalition. Because it can't be stopped in just one country. Because what they can do is just move their factory someplace else, which is what we've seen. That, you know, if it is in the United States, they move it to Mexico. If, you know, then they can move it to Indonesia, and then they can move it to Vietnam, and then they move it to China, which has the cheapest labor of all.
They can play
one city against city, state against state, country against country, and then enter into alliances with elites and the governments in other countries who will make sure that workers there can't organize to get better conditions for themselves. I believe in some leveling out of the wealth of the world, but that isn't what globalization is doing. Globalization moves jobs where people are most oppressed.
First of all, I would like to see, we can start right here, right now, with something that's very easy to do. Let's stop calling these agreements, global agreements. Instead, we need to call them investor rights agreements.
Right,
exactly.
Corporate agreements. Let's just cut the garbage out right now about that and call them for what they are, which are either investor rights or corporate rights agreements, because too often these agreements are labeled as something, they're basically relabeling strychnine as spinach, okay?
Exactly.
Right.
And we have to label these, we have to call them for what they are. And another thing is we have to, rename, this term anti-globalist suggests something negative. And the anti-globalist campaign has to not necessarily reinvent itself, but name itself something like the Global Solidarity Movement, for example, so we can get on the positive beat of this thing. That way people don't think we're anti-something. We are pro-something.
No, we're pro the interest of about 98% of the people in the world.
Agreed, but when you have others defining who we are, then you've already yielded the propaganda war.
Right.
Well, Jerry, what you had just mentioned about the corporations chasing the most oppressed people of the world to get the best return, I've got a little news piece here about the maquiladoras in Mexico, and it says that they had their worst performance in 35 years in 2001.
Right.
Over 238,000 jobs were lost in the maquilas. 350 factories shutting down. And where were they going? They were going to China. So, I mean, so much for all the good jobs that NAFTA was supposed to create, eh?
Yeah.
I have another little tidbit for you, too.
Real quick, brother. We're running out of time fast.
This is very quick. Motorola, which, is supposed to be the cutting-edge industries where all the new future jobs will be created, is building a university outside of Beijing where they will train and educate the engineers to build the new technologies of tomorrow. So the so-called high-tech industry and the high-tech boom that was supposed to lift people out of the old smokestack industries is a ruse.
Dell
moving the high tech out as well.
Right. Michael Dell laid off 7,000 people here and said he's moving his facilities overseas. I would like you to call me like maybe Monday in my office and we can talk some more about the information that you have.
Absolutely. Let me just get your in the right way here.
It's 472-1915 in Austin.
Area code 512.
Yeah.
I appreciate your call, Rick.
If you just repeat, is it, you're in Austin?
Yes.
Okay.
512-472-1915.
Yeah, and I didn't quite get your name because
Jerry Locke.
Jerry Locke?
Yep.
And you can catch him in Austin Monday, July 22nd,
that's
11
right.
a.m. at the Texas Fair Trade Coalition founding convention, and hopefully we'll get a big delegation from Houston out here. We're running out of time real
fast. Good luck,
brother.
Thank you. Finding some work.
Thank you for all your time.
Thank you, Rick.
Yes.
I'd like to just thank you for being on the show. I wish we had more time. We've got a couple callers left that we're just not going to be able to get to. I ran over last week on the show into the prison show's time, and I don't want to do it this week, so I do apologize to the callers.
We had a kind of a unique situation. That's three times a year we come to the airwaves, and we ask the listeners to help make pledges to keep this program, to keep the airwaves alive and well here in Houston on Pacifica Radio. And we were in pledge drive, and we want to thank a lot of those folks that called in. We did real well last week for the Labor Show, for our second show during pledge drive. And, you know, once again, please follow through with what you said you'd do and send those pledges in. The station needs your help, and we thank you for it.
Exactly. One more thing. I was talking to a brother of mine at my union meeting. He's an electrician, but he's also in a band called Pet Rooster, and he was telling me that they are nominated in the Houston Press for a Bluegrass Award, and it got me to thinking. You know, there are a lot.
This morning.
Oh, did you? There's a lot of working people that, you know, are playing bands on the side, mm-hmm. and what I'd like to do is try and get these people to start learning some labor songs. Maybe we can bring them out to some of our local protests. Maybe bring them into the station.
Absolutely.
You know, David Mintz, brother, if you're out there, please volunteer to help push that through. And if you would, people out there, vote for Pet Roosters. And if you're in a band, contact me at voicesatwork.net. My and Tim's email's out there. We're about to go to our song, Rockin' Solidarity.
But before we do, I don't know, Jerry still with us? I think we lost Jerry.
Yep, Jerry's gone.
Okay, well... Once again, this has been an edition of Voices at Work, Labor Radio in Houston. I'm Tim Pagel.
I'm Ron Gagne.
Till next week.
Take care, brothers.
And sisters.
Amen.
Solidarity forever, oh, forever. For Friday, July 5th. If you're basking in the heat and sun right now, you might be surprised to know that Earth is now farthest from the sun for this year.
Earth's orbit around the sun is almost, but not quite, circular. So we have a closest and farthest point from the sun every year. Late tonight, according to U.S. clocks, tomorrow morning if you're in Europe or Africa, we're farthest from the sun for 2002.
This is Earth's aphelion, and the difference in distance isn't much. We're about 150 million kilometers from the sun now, in contrast to about 146 million kilometers in January. Earth's distance from the sun doesn't create our planet's seasons.
Instead, the seasons come and go because Earth is tilted from being exactly upright by 23.5 degrees. Right now, sunlight is striking the northern hemisphere more directly than the southern, so it's summer here and winter there.
Northern hemisphere summer or southern hemisphere winter are technically the longest seasons. That's because when Earth reaches its aphelion, or farthest point from the sun, our planet moves slightly more slowly in orbit, so slightly more time passes between the June solstice and September equinox than between any other solstice and equinox.
Special thanks today to Research Corporation, a foundation for the advancement of science. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway.